Welcome back after the meal break. We are continuing with the Azure Day, of course, about IS virtual machines. And I think Cheryl is going to talk about networking.
Yes, now we're good to the fun networking stuff. Even though it's IaaS, you still are pretty much responsible for figuring out how that networking is going to work for you and for the virtual machines that you want to put within it. So we're going to go through the virtual network basics, name resolution, which is really important and people forget about this all the time, and traffic manager, which will show you how to load balance your endpoints, but not really load balance the traffic to your endpoints. So, couple ideas about virtual network. You can use them in two different ways. You can make it like a branch office in the cloud. You can extend your data center. And a lot of you have already extended your data center to other data centers. So it's not really that far off to be at one place and have your stuff be in another place and have a secure connection between the two. It's like, you know, we do this now. You can also, though, create a protected virtual private network in the cloud. And that keeps everything contained. So you're not talking about any sort of connection pipe to your branch office at all, or to your corp network. Everything's contained in there, and then you just connect in externally. So you have some choices to make. One of the cool things, though, is you can create one of those protected private virtual networks in the cloud, and if you make the right choices, you're able to then extend it to become a branch office in the cloud should you later want to do that. But we want to make sure that you make the choices that will allow you for the most flexibility down the road, because once you make some of these choices, you have to go back and tear it all down and rebuild it if you decide to change direction.
That's a VPN connection already.
Yes, the VPN connection, exactly. So one of the things that we touched upon earlier were these things called DIPs and VIPs, and it doesn't really show it in the management portal as a DIP, but that is your dynamic IP address. And then you have the VIPs, which you have seen in the portal already. So your VIP is your IP address that is not bound to a computer or a network interface card or anything. It's bound to your cloud service, and that's how you would access things through it. And you saw that when Ronald did some of the demos earlier. The cloud service is on the outside. The VM is on the inside. The VM never gets the VIP, only the cloud service. This is important because you should know that people cannot just directly access your VMs using these external IP addresses unless you let them do things and configure things, as we were showing RDP access and port numbers. You can have multiple VMs, as you saw, in the single cloud service. They do share the same VIP. And again, we showed that if you remove these VMs from the cloud service, you do lose the VIP. And if you go ahead and just delete one VM in a cloud service, you get to keep the VIP. So that's kind of nice. The DIPs are the thing that is, I think, the most interesting about virtual network. VIP is more like external endpoint kind of ideas.
The public IP address.
The public IP address, right. And the DIP is more internal. It's not something you can specify. It's something that you get sent to you via DHCP. So one of the things about creating a virtual network will be that you can specify the range from which your virtual machine will grab a dynamic IP address. So that's kind of nice, because if you want to have a specific range because you're going to do something that's cross-network later, cross-premises later, you need to know what IP ranges that you're allowed to use. And the IP address is going to equate to the entire life of that VM. So if you stop deallocate your VM, you do lose your DIP. It's not there anymore. It's not like a big deal. You can just recreate the VM and you get another DIP. But you know, if you're particularly attracted and like attached, like I want this IP address to be .4, you can't really say that that's what it's going to come up as. So it's just something to know. So we'll talk again. The cloud service gets the VIP, and you can tell that that's an external virtual IP address range. The internal virtual machines, in this case, they both have DIPs. I don't know if these guys are in a virtual network or not. It's really hard to tell, because when you create a virtual machine outside of a virtual network, it could get a DIP that looks very much like this. If you create it within the virtual network, you can specify the range. So perhaps someone has specified a range of 192.168 something, XLX, and they have created two VMs within that virtual network. But because the diagram is not showing you, you can't just look at a VM and go, oh, you're in a VNet or not in a VNet.
So you can do networking without a VNet, but then you just don't have control over the IP addresses.
You don't have control over the IP addresses, and there are a couple things that you will lose. You'll lose some of your name resolution capabilities
because you won't get
like just the Windows Azure ability to it. You have to provide your own. There's a lot of communication that you kind of really do want to have within the virtual network. Something that we talked about a little bit earlier was that quick create wizard when you're creating your virtual machine. And I was going through it a little afterwards, and it's kind of missing the virtual network part of it. And one of the problems with that is when you create a virtual machine, you have to create it where it's going to be. And if you don't create it in a virtual network and you want the capabilities that virtual network is going to provide to you, which I'll show you in a minute, then you have to be very careful to have the virtual network first, then create the virtual machine and put it in there. You can't just go, boom, move it over.
Right? So quick create is really just for something you throw away the same day or something
like
this?
I don't know. I've never had like a, I've got to create an emergency virtual machine right now. I must use quick create. But I guess it could happen. But it's that we have the same thing with virtual network. We have a quick create for a virtual network. I'm like, oh, yeah, stat, got to get a virtual network. Because I don't need those settings. No big deal. You know?
Exactly.
It just pops over. So when incoming traffic comes through, it is coming through your software load balancer, right, if you don't have a virtual network with cross-premises connectivity. So in this case, I've got a cloud app, basically. I stole Super Coffee, by the way. I actually registered
that.
That's why you couldn't use it. Now I'm messing up. It's mine. And I've got two virtual machines. And those virtual machines, again, you showed earlier about how the port works to get through to them. This is how you would RDP to these virtual machines. So it will come through the software load balancer, and it's going to that VIP. It's going 137.135.64.110, right? And then it's got to know which VM to go to. And by specifying that port, you're telling it, yeah, go here or go there.
But what the before you say that, the component that you call software load balancer, that's the name of that component. But that's not the same as the endpoint load balancing that we had earlier, right?
It's they're friends. It's all kind of mixed in there together. But this is truly it's a software part of piece.
Okay.
So it is
okay.
Made of software, I guess we'll say that. But it's they're kind of mixed in there, and they all kind of do the same thing. They kind of judge where that information is going to go. You notice I have VM1 and VM2 because within that same cloud app I have here a cloud service. So you may see this as a hosted service. That's another name that they say a lot. Hosted service. Hosted service could be a cloud service.
Is it an old name or something?
It's an old name, yeah. And so you start reading like old things, old docs and stuff, and they're like, hosted service. You're like, what the heck is that? It's a cloud service. So within this cloud service, you do have your two VMs. They have two different names because they're within the same cloud service. And that just gets a little weird, right? You can't not have it. So let's go to virtual network. Within the virtual network, you can communicate pretty freely within these between the cloud services. And what's interesting about this is you've got these two separate cloud services. Notice that each cloud service has different things going on. There's a VM1 in one cloud service, and there's a VM1 in the other cloud service.
Same name.
And they're in the same virtual network. Oh my, they can be there. That's okay, because what they're going to do is communicate through their fully qualified domain name should they need to do name resolution, or they're going to communicate through their DIPs if they need to talk to each other.
But you have two cloud services now.
I do.
Both will have a different name, right? So one is Super Coffee and the
other
one is another name.
I probably should have shown that too. Yeah, the cloud services, they'll have different names. They'll have different ways, different endpoints, obviously, because they have different VIPs. But if you want them to communicate within the virtual network, they're able to resolve a certain amount of information. I mean, you can't be like, VM1 wants to talk to VM1, and then the virtual network is going to be who are you? Why are you doing that? So it does get a little bit tricky when you try to use some of the native name resolution, which is why I'm a really big fan of using DNS. But this is kind of...
Understandably.
Yeah. So this is kind of just one way to do it. Okay, now we're going to get trickier. We've got our software load balancer. We've got our two VNets, VNet1, VNet2. We've got multiple virtual networks within the same subscription. Not really that much trickier, actually. It's the same thing.
Well, but I noticed that two of the DIPs are the same.
Yeah, the two of the DIPs are pretty much the same.
But nobody noticed that.
I'm sorry. I should have mentioned that, too. Yes, the DIPs are the same because they can be. Because you've got two separate virtual networks, like Coke and Pepsi, that kind of idea, where you could manage two separate virtual networks. They're not all within the same virtual network.
Right.
So what is interesting about this is that these two VNets can't communicate directly to each other. So VM1 can't talk through anything to get to the other VM1 without going out through the software load balancer, which means it's going through the cloud service VIP to VIP.
But that goes out to the internet.
Out to the internet,
yeah. That's always possible, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the point kind of is that they're secluded because they're separate virtual networks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And because they're separate virtual networks, you can give them the same IP address range. It's no big deal. And you can give them the same host names. They don't know about each other. So that's kind of a nice feature,
yes,
I think.
Yes, indeed.
So again, no intervenant communication at all out through the software load balancer, and then we've got like a little computer trying to talk to one of it. Notice one of these two does not have any virtual network at all.
Oh, the one on the way
on the right. Yeah, he's just a VM. He's like pretty slick. He's VM, not even VM1, he's VM. So yeah, and he can have a dip out there too. He will, so. And notice that dip, I'll come back to the dip.
I was just going to say, yeah. that is like a nice number.
Yeah.
The 100, you mean, right?
Yeah, yeah. So we'll get back to the IP addressing, but just keep that dip in mind because that's a weird one, right?
And because all the other ones have been private
like
10
IP,
something of 192.168.
Exactly, yeah. And that dip is actually a private IP address range as well. Okay,
really?
We'll jump in.
We'll get to this.
One of those like RFC ones that is only for carriers and you can only use it internally. You can't route it and all that. So, you know, we can use it. And so that's what I do have a VM that grabbed one of those the other day and was like, this is cool. I've only read about this. And yeah, it did. It's pretty neat. So I saved it. We have it.
Nice.
Cross-premises communication. So what we've got going on here is a lot of stuff, right? We've got our software load balancer. We've got two virtual networks. We've got one cloud service. Those VM virtual networks can't talk to each other directly. They can't talk to the cloud service directly. They can talk down through virtual network gateways through secure pipes. They can talk to each company separately. Those two companies can't talk to each other directly unless they set up some kind of weird thing that I'm not aware of.
Yep.
And the IP address range for both of those companies can be exactly the same on their local network and on their virtual network if they want to be. So it's kind of nice that way because you don't really have to worry about stepping on anybody else's toes.
And this is separate type of communication than the endpoints, right? This has
yes.
nothing to do with endpoints because
nothing
that was
do.
From the internet.
Yeah, nothing to do with endpoints. This is all secure kind of internal communication.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
And I think people are doing this anyway when they create a branch office. So now they're just creating a branch office at another location. So thinking about a branch office in the cloud the cloud is a physical location. Mm-hmm. So basically you've created a branch office in another region in a physical building with people taking care of the stuff. And instead of you having to take care of all the racks and the servers and all that kind of stuff yourself, somebody else is taking care of that. So say you're running all kinds of stuff on Hyper-V and you want to move it to Azure, you can do that.
Oh, and it looks like the same subnet is being used in the subsidiary as is in the cloud server.
Yep.
So that's the same
subnet,
right?
As long as they aren't talking to each other directly.
Well, that's to the company and the subsidiary, but I also noticed that the 192 is used by the virtual machine. So
it is. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this could be actually two separate companies even, too, mm-hmm. and they have nothing to do with each other. But, like, the idea is that you can create two of these things and not worry about, like, the guy down the street using the same thing you're using because they're never going to infringe on each other. And if you do need to go external, you've got those VIPs that you would make use of.
Yes.
So it's kind of nifty. Oh, and notice the cloud service that's out there with no virtual network doesn't get to be friends with any of them. It's just kind of out there.
Because it doesn't have a VNet.
It doesn't have a VNet. And I can't kind of stick it in a VNet. I can't be like, oh, it's out there. And oh my gosh, I think I want it to be in a VNet. Oh my. I can't do that. It's got to either show up in the VNet or not show up in the VNet.
So you cannot change it after that?
No, I can't change it after that. And that's kind of a problem, I think, because the quick create doesn't give you the option of putting it in the VNet. So you just blast right through and you got this thing. And maybe you might not even think, oh, I want to use this for very long. But then you're like, this machine is awesome, right? You know, you could go ahead and, you know, go ahead and create the image as you showed. Mm-hmm. But you have to bring everything back down and then redeploy it back into it. So you're talking downtime. I mean, it may not be a big deal, but if you don't want downtime, it's kind of a big deal. So
Yes.
So traffic routing from the VNet, traffic will go through the gateway or the SLB. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, because it has to go to the internet or the company.
Exactly. So here are the questions. And this gets really confusing for people. I have a lot of people that say, I don't know which way the traffic's going to go. I'm not quite sure how this is supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks at the IP address, the DIP. And it's basically, or whatever destination IP address it's using, really. And it says, am I in the same VNet? If yeah, all right, go over, there it goes, right? Or if it's not listed there, it's not one of the things that are in your local VNet, it looks at a list called local networks, which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Okay.
And local networks is what tells it to send traffic through to the virtual network gateway. And that's still going to be a private traffic pipe. And so if it's listed there, you can send it through. One of the tricky things about local networks that you can do if you want to is you can list a network address range that isn't your own. It's not even located in your local network, and you can pretend it is because all it's doing is it's saying, did you make the list or did you not make the list? The problem is, well, not a problem, but the thing is on the other side, the thing that's receiving the traffic has to be able to know how to route that traffic. So it's got to be like, oh, we're throwing it out
Where
the door.
Are you?
Yeah, exactly. So, but you still, if you have ranges, you have to put them in the local network traffic list or it won't even know to send it anywhere. And it just looks and goes, no, sorry, you didn't make the list.
And if you put a range on the list that's not yours, mm-hmm. then you cannot really misuse it, right? Because no traffic is coming your way.
No, it's just telling it send the traffic out through the software load balancer or send the traffic down through the gateway. And if you send it through the gateway and whatever you have on the other side of the gateway is incapable of receiving that traffic, doesn't want to acknowledge it, I mean, you screwed up and you put the wrong range in there. It's not destroying anything, but it does mean that whatever you wanted to communicate to whatever destination is not going to get there. Yeah, so it's outbound traffic, not inbound. So this is pretty good.
Yeah, and indeed.
If it's not either of those, they're going to send it outbound again through the SLB. It's going to use your VIP, the same as any outbound traffic we would be using. So
the local network is not something that lives in the virtual machines, right? This is not in the Windows virtual machine. This is just the Azure infrastructure.
It's kind of, you're kind of trying to tell it what your local network is. Because you can't have address range overlaps. Because if you think about it, I mean, you're probably using an internal IP address range mm-hmm. for your local network. And if you wanted to use the same address range for your VNets, that would be really bad, right? Because it's like 192.168.1. whatever. Which way do I go? Well, I'll tell you, it's always going to send it to the VNet because it makes that list first.
Yeah, yeah.
The second thing it looks at is local networks. And if you really do have a host there that you want to send traffic to that's within the range up there, it's not going to make it. So you have to be very careful about these local network ranges if you want it to go to the destination you want it to be in, right?
That makes sense.
So that's important. So, and also something, make sure that your IP addresses are resolving to the range that you want it to resolve to, the correct IP address. And the reason I'm saying this, too, is sometimes people have DNS server entries that are going to the wrong thing.
Yeah.
They're sending them outbound or sending them a different way, and you just have to kind of ping and make sure that that's what the application is sending to. It's going to the right place. So I want to show you real quick to the desktop. How that kind of works. So we've got our local networks. I don't have any listed here. And we've got our cloud services and our VMs. So I'm going to take a look at the VM. I wanted to show you just one in particular. So looking at this VM, well, that's kind of popping around, isn't it? This VM has the virtual public IP address, of course, of the cloud service that it's in. And it's got an internal IP address of a 10-dot series. I didn't choose that. This VM is not inside a virtual network at all. It's just kind of sitting out there. So I'll show you something else here. Again, we've got the same DNS name going for the cloudapp.net. And we've got public IP address the same as the last one and a 10-dot series internal IP. And then this one, the host name is exactly the same as the other one.
Also VM1.
Also VM1. My DNS name is Super Coffee, which I stole from you. And put it in there. Public IP, again, different. But my internal IP address is part of that internal weird IP address range.
Yeah, 100.
Yeah, so it just shows up. And I was just really excited when I saw that. I'm like, yes, score, I got one. So that was pretty fun.
So only for special people.
Only for special people.
I never got it.
I never got it before either, and then it just showed up, and I'm like, okay, I can never delete this because it's just awesome. So,
nice.
Yes, I'm really excited about that. Okay, so that's all I have with this, probably. That's not what I wanted to do. I'm going to switch over to the PowerPoint.
Can I ask one question
on
the demo?
Please, yeah.
You mentioned that the virtual machine does not have, is not in a virtual network, or the cloud service is not in a virtual network. You can see that somewhere in the configuration of the virtual machine as
you
well,
You can see
right?
it in the virtual machine itself. Yeah, definitely. I can show that in the virtual machine. Oh, actually, can I?
On configure or something like that? Would it just indicate that it's not in a network?
I don't know if you can see it within the virtual machine at all. Where I look for things is inside the virtual network itself, which is way down at the bottom here.
Oh, just at networks?
Yeah, and I don't have any. I know I don't have any.
Oh, yeah,
but
so that must be, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where I find it. You can also see everything when you go to all. You can get a whole list of everything and kind of get an idea of what's going on
that.
So not too bad. Okay, I'm going to switch over to the next module. So you have a couple different options when you're doing name resolution. And if we're inside of a particular virtual network, you have more options. If you're not, then you have fewer options. Windows Azure will provide you DNS name resolution, but it's really limited. So some things you can do with iDNS are you can create your own host names. And that's important because early on you couldn't, and you got these really ugly host names, and you're like, wow, how do I connect to something by that name? You know, I think that, you know, names should make it easier rather than more difficult for IP addresses, and this made it more difficult. So this makes it easier now.
And a name would be pretty like something, pretty. Super Coffee.
Exactly, or VM1, or, you know, that could be part of the host name. The host name will be the short name of it. You can use a fully qualified domain name, as saw with the earlier one. If you had VM1 and VM1 and they want to talk, they might need to use that. Another point is that you don't need to configure anything at all. It's just there. And by not configuring it, you're configuring it. And if you put any DNS servers out there and kind of let Azure know about them, then you're not choosing to use this. So it's kind of just saying, is there a DNS server? No? Okay, we'll use this.
Ah, yes.
So it's kind of goes that way. It will resolve the VMs by hostname within that same cloud service, which is kind of nice. And what we've changed now is it will resolve by hostname within the same virtual network. It used to be that they just had to be in that same cloud service. And if you're in a different cloud service, have a nice say, you aren't getting any iDNS name resolution. But now it's within the whole virtual network. But the thing is, if you do have hosts with the same name in separate cloud services, you will have to use FQDN. And but FQDN is that crazy long name for the host.
And this is real, right? If inside the virtual machine you would look at the IP configuration, you would see the IP address DNS server, right?
You can do an IP config all, and you can see the IP address of the DNS server, and you can go ahead and do ping back and forth, and you can also resolve names back and forth. So it works quite well for very specific things. And it does standard, obviously, DNS lookups. What it doesn't do so well is bring your own DNS, of course, will do name resolution between cloud services as the other one will do. But bring your own DNS does something cool where it allows you to have multiple host names for the same VM. You can't do that with iDNS because you're not really configuring anything. It's configuring it for you, and you get one host name and have a nice day. So if you need to have more than one host name for whatever reason, you can go ahead and do that in your own DNS server. The big thing about DNS bringing your own is the cross-premises name resolution it brings. And you can kind of think about, well, if you wanted to resolve a name of something on your private network or on your premises network, iDNS isn't going to know about that host. It's going to have, like, no clue. So you're like, hey, I'd like to resolve this name, and it's not going to have it on the list. So anytime you're going cross-premises, you need to have a name server that will have both sides going on.
So if you bring your own DNS, that means you need to have a VPN connection, or is it separate from that? You have the DNS in the virtual machine.
You would put the DNS in the virtual machine typically, yeah, and you can either have a cross-premises connection or not. You could put your own DNS server inside a VM in a virtual network and not have cross-premises. And think of things like Active Directory, anything that requires... like reverse lookups or anything that requires...
Or service records.
Things that need to be registered in there. Yeah. you're not going to get that in IDNS. You're going to get just basic, hi, can I, you know, talk, ping, ping, ping. You know,
that just thing. Like your internet provider's DNS would also not allow any
exactly.
of that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And in fact, that's really cool that you bring that up, because if you wanted to, you could actually list an internet provider's DNS server as your DNS server.
Oh, just point to it.
You just point to it. If you're just looking for name resolution, but not particularly within your environment at all, and you want to, you know, have that resolved differently, you could do that. I mean, I don't know.
Well, but you still cannot do service records.
No, you still can't do service records. I mean, I guess maybe if you outsourced your DNS, it would go there, you know, but this won't do service records or anything NetBIOS wins.
Oh, you can also use those pretty DNS servers?
Exactly.
8888 or something?
Yeah, and you can use those. But again, what you're thinking about is when you create and architect your environment, you have to figure out what you want to use the DNS server for. And if you're using it for finding other things in your environment, you kind of...
So it'll be your own DNS server.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So I have people that are like pointing all over the place, like, it works. Or they're putting in like IP addresses of things that are not DNS servers, because in the interface, which we'll see, you can put an IP address in there as long as it's valid, and it can be of something that's not running the DNS service, because you're just saying, I have faith that this thing's running DNS.
I'm pretty sure that's not going to work if there's no DNS server.
No, it's not going to work. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But because we don't restrict you from putting that in, we don't go out and go, I don't know, are you really a DNS server? Let me check. You know, we don't.
It might be a DNS server in the future.
It might. Yeah, who knows? Right, but right now, we don't allow you to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you change that if you make a mistake like that? Because you said that you cannot change it. You can change this.
Oh, the DNS servers?
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
Oh, so you can change that part.
I'll show you how to make a mistake. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'll show you how to do that. Early on, we couldn't change anything. Like, it was a very chicken and egg thing where you had what do I think my DNS server is going to be? So you'd bring up a virtual machine that you intended to make your DNS server, and then you'd cross your fingers because you're bringing it up in a virtual network where you've already defined the DNS server.
Oh, and you hope it's
.4, because that was always the go-to. Like, within the range, you're like, oh, .4 is my first box is always going to be .4, and I mean, typically it would be. But you had to define it in the DNS service list, and you couldn't change it.
Why is that in a subnet range that is .4? Is like 1, 2, and 3 are doing something else?
Yeah, they're reserved.
Or the default gateway. And
yeah, the
maybe
gateway.
Two other things?
Yeah, exactly. They have other jobs.
and then four is the first one that's available.
And interestingly, you don't always get the .4. Like, if you maybe stop deallocated something, that IP address doesn't release immediately. I mean, it takes a little time.
Yeah.
So then you're bringing up another virtual machine. It doesn't just like backfill that spot. You're like, oh, I had .4, now this one's going
to
be
.4. Oh, you have to wait, let it get released or something.
Yeah, and then it's still luck of the draw, right? Because maybe you have 10 other servers out there, and you know, maybe it goes all the way through the list and goes back. I'm not quite sure how it decides what it decides, but it doesn't seem to backfill back to .4 because I've been playing with that. Like, no, it didn't work that way. I was hoping it would. I'd be like, oh, we've detected .4 is empty.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, it doesn't quite do that. So we've got some requirements for your DNS server. It has to accept the dynamic DNS registration, which makes sense. You know, being a computer online, you want it to be able to register its name and IP address and what it does dynamically, because you're not going to be sitting there typing that stuff in yourself, right?
Right.
It's like, ugh. Record scavenging has to be off, and this is because the lease that you'll get for that IP address is really long. But your record scavenging may not be as long as that lease. It's probably not 30 years for your scavenging.
What is record scavenging again? It deletes old records,
Yeah,
it right?
deletes old records.
Ah,
and
yeah, yeah.
So when we put the record in, or you know, the service registers, it's got that time
for 30
frame.
Years.
Yeah, exactly. It's got 30 years, but you've scavenged it, but it's not going to reannounce itself. I was like, oh, will you please put me back in now that you've scavenged my record? You know, it doesn't...
Maybe after 15 years, if it's halfway, it might do it
Yeah, maybe, right. Yeah, yeah. So you really have to make sure that is, or you're going to find that your name resolution is kind of screwed up. Recursion, of course, has to be enabled, and it has to be accessible on TCP UDP port 53, because that's just how it works. So if it's not accessible and they can't get to it, then they're not going to register it. And I've also had people put in DNS servers that nobody can get to. So they're like, oh, yeah, we always use the DNS server, this one over here. And then they forget that they're either in the cloud in a virtual network and they have no connectivity, or they've not listed a local network to get to that connectivity. So we see all kinds of interesting things with DNS. And then they think, oh, well, my virtual network's broken. I'm like, no, your DNS is kind of screwed up. And That's it. And I mean, it just seems like such a simple thing, but man, DNS can like make you or break you on this stuff.
Well, yeah, if it's not there. Mentioned port 453, but this is not getting any traffic from the internet, right? So you don't have to create an endpoint for 453.
Oh, no, no. This is all internal stuff. So if you've got a server running DNS, the clients need to be able to get through that port to talk to it.
The clients in Azure already.
And if you shut down the server and don't like let them get through, then that's just not going to be good for that, right?
Yeah.
So that's how that goes. So there are a couple different ways we can specify DNS servers. One of them is in your network configuration file, and the other one is in the management portal. And I'll go and show you how both of those work. In the management portal, you just merely list it. In the network configuration file, you can go ahead and kind of switch it around. So you were asking about how you update these DNS servers. Mm-hmm. In this network configuration file, you just could change it, things around. So one thing at the top is specifying all of the DNS servers that are available to you for your subscription. That's not what's going to be in your virtual network. It's just whatever is in your subscription.
Multiple DNS servers.
Any of them, yeah. And I've got like an external one, right? Nobody's going to reach it, but it's there. So you can do that. Or you can go ahead and do this in the management portal, and it's going to write to this file. So that's going to go to this file. And once you specify it in this element, then you can go ahead and refer to it. So you notice the bottom one is not referring to any IP address. It's just merely saying, choose that one up there.
Yes.
So when you change it, or you change order around even, it rewrites this whole file. So say I wanted to, swap out DNS1 with DNS2 because I find DNS2 is much more reliable. Mm-hmm. I would go ahead and change that, and it would write to this file. Or you can change it in the file itself and upload the file.
Just as an XML file.
It's a configuration file. So one of the nice things about configuration is that you can do it either way.
So this is a single configuration file that contains multiple VNets?
It contains multiple VNets. It contains everything that your subscription has.
Oh, okay.
So it's this really big, long file, and you can get really complicated with your file by putting the subnets for your virtual network, by listing your local network sites. Everything is going to be in this file about that. And one thing that people like to do is they'll export the file and save it, so in case, for whatever reason, they want to recreate this environment, mm-hmm. they can just upload it, and the file
creates it all over again.
So if you just delete your VNet, oops, you can just put it back up there again.
Talk about multiple VNets. On the blog chat is a question about multiple VNets.
Okay.
If one cloud service can, mm-hmm. if I read it correctly, can contain multiple VNets, or if it's just maximum one VNet per cloud service.
If the VNets are not inside a cloud service, the cloud service lives within a VNet. So a VNet's basically an overlay or a structure. You have to kind of think of it that way. Basically, you plug the wires in to your regular computers, and they kind of talk. So the cloud service is just a container that can sit on a structure that contains the VNet.
But then it would only be associated, if that's a correct word, with one VNet?
And
not multiple VNets.
Right, because it's going to pull the IP address, IP addresses from the things that within it would come from that VNet. So that's where you kind of get into. The cloud service is really ambiguous, kind of, when it gets to virtual networks.
Yeah, well, I can see where it's maximum one, because it has to know where to get the IP address from and not all over the place.
Well, but if you think your virtual machine can only be in one cloud service, and your virtual machine can only be in one virtual network.
Yes.
But that's a really good question. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go over to the demo. I'm going to show you where the DNS servers are. Okay, I still have no virtual networks, and I don't need one to create DNS servers. I have a couple different ways where I can create them. I'm not creating them. I am specifying DNS servers that somebody, somewhere, somehow, maybe me, has created that are running that do name resolution. And these are my external DNS servers to my internal IDNS. So as soon as I list something, I don't get to use IDNS in that virtual network.
It's one of the two, right.
And it just looks... So I can do a couple different things. I can go through the network services, and I can say register a DNS server. And so I'll do that right now.
Oh, and then that is an existing DNS server, right?
Yeah, I'm not creating one.
I'm not
creating one at all. So I'm just going to call it DNS1 because I, too, am highly creative. So,
yeah. Could go well with my web server one.
Yeah, it could, right? Yeah. There, so I've just told it, whoops, I could put a dot there, that'd be really helpful. So I'm gonna register it, and when I register the DNS server, it shows up under my DNS servers. There's nothing to do with it, I can delete it maybe, that's about it. You don't get to really change around your DNS servers. I can also register a DNS server when I'm creating a virtual network. I'm gonna create another DNS server here too, just for the heck of it. Back through, DNS server two.
DNS 2, I'm hoping.
Yeah, I hope so. Oh my gosh, what am I going to type? Because I can't type today, so it could be anything. Who knows? All right, registering the second DNS server. Amazing. So when you get to these DNS servers, what's going to happen is eventually you're going to be able to specify them, and I'll show you really briefly what that looks like. So if I'm going to go through and create maybe a new virtual network. So I've got quick create here. I can specify, this is when I have an emergency virtual network I want to create,
quickly.
Right? Quickly, yeah. quick create. Anyway, if you want to specify a DNS server ahead of time, then you go ahead and you can select them from the drop downs. Notice that you don't have the capability of creating a DNS server or specifying a DNS server.
Oh, that's why you created it first.
Mm-hmm. So my options are one of these two or none. You know.
And the fact that you created the DNS server entries already,
yeah,
that doesn't mean anything yet, right? Because you could still use iDNS now, etc.
Right, exactly. All I'm doing is telling Azure that these DNS servers live out here,
somewhere. Yeah,
and they're available for me to use in a virtual network
at
some point should I choose to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's, and it will show up in the file, and it'll be something that I've specified as a DNS server, but I haven't really specified that it's doing anything.
Yeah,
and nobody's using them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of neat. When you use the full create wizard, which I'll show you in a bit, to create a virtual network, you'll be able to create DNS servers within that.
Mm-hmm.
And I should stop saying the word create. Specify them, because again, you're not really creating a DNS server.
Yeah, you just specify the IP address of an existing DNS
server.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So we'll go back to the slides. That was very exciting, wasn't it? DNS names. There's nothing much to show with DNS, but it just does everything, you know? It's kind of like a big deal. Now we're going to go on to Traffic Manager. And the reason I put Traffic Manager in here is that, okay, it's GA now. It's been like in preview for a year and a half. Now we're GA, a couple months ago anyway. And what it works really well with is DNS. So if you have your DNS services down well and you know what's going on with it. Remember we were talking earlier about load balancing? And I said, oh, can you do this in a different region? And how would you, you know, do that? Well, I kind of knew you could do it with this. I wasn't sure what you could do with the other side of it. This one, you can go ahead and do some different things with regions. So if you want to have a performance type of load balancing, we're talking traffic load balancing. It doesn't necessarily know which of your servers is overloaded and don't talk to that one. It's busy, you know. But it does know where the clients are coming from based on destination ping. It does know if those things are healthy. It can kind of monitor them, and it can direct the traffic to any of the destinations that you've specified.
And this would be for the first time now today, actually, talking about multiple data centers and
this
multiple regions, right?
Exactly. Yeah, multiple data centers. And this is not really a virtual network thing, but I wanted to put it in here because it does stem off of DNS perfectly.
Yeah.
Because without DNS and without understanding how that name resolution is going across, this would make no sense at all. So earlier we spoke about how the VIPs are working, and we're back to VIPs now, and we're back to those long DNS names going out and all that. Traffic Manager would be able to take an incoming request and point it to whichever data center you needed to point it to the cloud app that you want it to be pointed to. And then within that cloud app, you can do whatever you want to.
So this would provide the function that you always connect to the closest data center, right? If you do it from Asia, you connect to the Asian data center. And
well, it's interesting that you would mention that too. It's not so much geographically closest, it's the quickest. So remember earlier
well,
you said?
Well, that's probably what I meant. The best connection.
The best connection, right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you are sitting next to a data center for whatever reason, it's faster for you to go cross-country to another one, it will direct you there. You know, that's absolutely part of what you can do.
I am from Amsterdam, and one of the Azure data centers is in Amsterdam. So
okay.
I'm probably going to get that one.
you probably are. But for some reason you didn't, you know,
it
would direct you. And some of the ways that you can configure Traffic Manager are, again, the performance latency one, round robin, which is kind of round robin. No, round robin will go through and it'll just pick whichever mm-hmm. ones you have, round robin. And then you've got the disaster recovery sort of failover one, which a lot of people like for even performance as well. So you get some really cool ones in there. So again, it allows you to control the distribution of your user traffic based on the DNS configuration that you've chosen. If you're running these cloud services, as you said, all over the world, you can get to whatever you need to get to quickly. So I like that one. That's really good. And one of the neat things is if you're doing maintenance on one of your cloud services, you can bring that down, but you can tell Traffic Manager to exclude it from the pool. And so, again, people don't know that your cloud service is down in that place. They just go to where they...
To the always, next nearest or something.
Yeah, they have no idea what you're doing. Yeah, yeah. So it's really nice if you're doing that kind of thing. Or for an earthquake, for perhaps.
Planned and unplanned.
Yeah, your planned earthquakes, of course. You
just those earthquakes?
Yeah, those earthquakes. So it would be able to handle that kind of thing because it would sense then something is not where they think it's supposed to be. And they...
So it doesn't do it automatically, not like a maintenance schedule where you know it's going to happen.
Well, you can do this yourself. You can say, I would like to exclude a certain cloud service.
Right.
Or you can say, I would like to exclude a certain endpoint from that cloud service. Or I don't want anything happening over here.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
You can do these really kind of cool things with Traffic Manager where you can include multiple cloud services or endpoints with particular Traffic Manager profiles. So you can create multiple profiles because your servers may be serving out different things, right? And they can be part of this and they can be part of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can create these really interesting complex structures where you know it's doing two different things, the server itself, and it will be part of this Traffic Manager profile for that thing and this Traffic Manager profile for the other thing.
And it's all invisible for the end user, right? It's not
the
URLs are changing.
The end user's got no idea. So the end user's requesting the information.
That's the only thing.
They're doing. Yeah. And basically it comes in, Traffic Manager hands back what the end user's asking for. But basically we go through this kind of processing of rules and say, oh, yeah, here's the answer. So it kind of does this equation based on these profiles that you create and all these rules that you create that go with it. And then the user will contact that directly by the IP address that it returns as a result. And then it goes Hopefully nearby, but if not, if it's down for maintenance, it's going to go to the one that needs to go to. The thing with Traffic Manager is you do have to create the rules. And talking through this, they go, look at this. It looks a lot more complicated than it really is. So what I like to do is show you how this works.
Good.
Because sometimes showing something is a lot faster. It's pretty easy. So let's go back to the desktop and we'll go to Traffic Manager. And Traffic Manager is again new Traffic Manager. And you can quick create something in Traffic Manager. I don't use quick create with Traffic Manager because it doesn't give you any settings. It says, oh, well, here's the prefix. Now, with this prefix is interesting because you take the incoming DNS query and you have an entry on your DNS server that basically sends it over to this DNS prefix that I'm going to create. So it kind of just reroutes it a little bit, and says, oh, go here.
Because the end user is still using the www.
Yeah, they don't know what this prefix is. Yeah. And it creates, again, if you did this quick create, this performance failover. So I'll go ahead and do it. So I'm going to see if I can do it. Look, it's the same as my other one because it's a .trafficmanager.net. And what I would have to do is on my DNS server tell it to go here now.
And that's also why it has to be unique, of course, right?
Yes, Definitely. Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're creating a profile. Now the profile I'm going to create, that was pretty quick because it's got nothing in it. So there's nothing going on with this profile. But within the profile, got the dashboard. There's nothing going on in the dashboard really except the DNS name. That's about it. You need to go ahead and add your endpoints. Because without endpoints, the profile does absolutely nothing. So I'll go ahead and add some endpoints. I've got three endpoints here, and notice I've put them in different regions on purpose because I want them to be in different regions. So I'm going to just add all three of these. It's going to have to think about it for a minute, whether it likes my endpoints or not, I guess. And it's checking to see. They're going to tell me that they're not very good, but that's okay. And then we'll go over to the configure screen, and this is where things get fun.
So the endpoints are are supposed to be all equivalent, right?
Yes, they should. They have to be
pointing to the same surface.
So yeah, I should have made that clear. They're all going to point to the same surface, and what you're trying to do is the traffic load balance these endpoints.
Correct.
So maybe the same thing that you talked about earlier with your web page
and hitting
the different web pages. This is the same idea where it's going to just send it to different things. So this is our SuperCopy traffic manager. We've got a DNS time to live on it. That's how long it's going to live within the Traffic Manager DNS system, not how long it lives with you.
Right.
So once your client actually caches that information, it's going to keep going back to the same place it went to until its own cache expires. So if it knows the IP address of the destination and you take that particular host down, it's going to get a bad, you know, it'll get the error because it can't reach it, but it thinks it's supposed to be able to reach it.
So you'll
run into
until the time to live expires, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is where we choose our load balancing methods. And we can choose performance, again, round robin or failover. Performance is pretty easy. It's just going to say which of these three is going to have the least amount of latency to return the connection ping. And it does a 200, okay. The round robin is going to be, again, a different load balancing method. And this is the fun one, failover. So failover can be tricky because people often forget to configure their failover list. The failover list really matters. And the reason I say this is tricky is because it creates it for you and you have to go through and say, oh, this is what I want it to do. I want to move these around to different places. And the failover is it hits one, then it hits the other.
Oh, it goes to the next one.
Yeah, it goes to the next one. That's its priority list. So you have to adjust those. You can add a bunch in there. That's no problem. This monitoring setting is interesting. It's very similar to what you were explaining earlier, although you can do a slash port 80 for HTTP or HTTPS.
Yeah.
HTTPS does not check to see if the certificate's valid. It doesn't care. It just assumes
if the port is there.
If the port is there or not.
Yeah.
So
is traffic manager, excuse me for asking, but I see HTTP and HTTPS. Does it mean traffic manager is only for web traffic? Or this is just testing if it's live?
It's endpoint traffic. It's just endpoint traffic, external.
Okay.
Only. Yeah. We don't have anything cool like internal doing this kind of thing. It's all external coming in. But I just kind of included it because it was so DNS-centric, very different than what you were talking about earlier with actual load balancing happening, right?
I mean, is it only for HTTP and HTTPS traffic?
No. This is the monitoring setting. I should specify.
You can do whatever
you want to with the endpoints and all this. This is just the monitoring setting, and it's just going to
either that's just the probing.
And you can say, you know, what happens with the probing and all that. But it's not quite as specific as what you had on the other one where you can specify some different things. So I can save this configuration. Done. Saved.
And then the last step you do somewhere else where you specify in DNS that WW SuperCoffee should point to this address, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I should show you some interesting things about this that I can go ahead and take these endpoints offline myself if I want to. So I can disable an endpoint specifically.
For maintenance.
These are degraded because they're not doing anything. Or I can go to my dashboard and I can decide to disable the entire profile. So if you have multiple traffic manager profiles, you can disable one and do some configurations or work on something and leave the other one up, whatever you want to do with that, because it's just going to hit it. So.
If you understand DNS, then it's pretty straightforward to,
to
configure, but you need to know
but
DNS.
But you need to know DNS.
Yeah.
So without explaining DNS, this would have been kind of
meaningless. Exactly.
And with that, I think we're pretty much ready for a quick break, I think. So we've covered our virtual network basics, and we've covered our traffic manager, and we've covered our cloud services. Let's do a quick break.
Okay.
All right, 10 minutes?